should hum after
I'm
all.
I'm telling you.
Yeah, okay, so... or just fuck it, and we'll just start. So go ahead, Neil. Everyone, welcome to the fourth episode of Camp Elasticity. I don't have elasticity, pardon me. I don't have any recording music to intro this show recorded on my phone, so we're just going to... everybody's happy. It's Camp Elasticity. John Kubler, I know you're gonna crack a smile. You're gonna let out a few notes. Come on, John, Johnny. Johnny K. Johnny K. to Wayne Foster. I know you're gonna. Taylor Grant. Alright, okay, alright. Well, welcome. Welcome, everybody, to the fourth episode of Camp Elasticity. This is the podcast. This is the Do Easy podcast where everyone comes at the same time and takes turns talking and interacts with each other and listens to each other, and it's a conversation under a microscope. It's a revival of the salons that they had in the past, the literary and philosophical salons of the past. Hmm. And today with us we've got Taylor Grant. He spends his years following the Renaissance Fair around the country and stopping into Denver where his family lives periodically and then going back to catch the next Renaissance gig. And we've got Chris Barker. I didn't even notice, but he slipped in. He's our Ed McMahon today. He's going to be here judging and listening.
Now he's punchline.
Yes.
He makes
you're right, Johnny.
Appropriate noises like that. We've got Audrey Turco-Potts, and she is a software engineer. She's just going to be part of the audience mostly today, much like Chris and Neil, who's the engineer. Taylor's going to tell us about his life in the Renaissance Fair. John Kubler is a proprietor, and I think not the first owner, but the current sole owner of Kilgore Books, which is a used bookstore next to Wax Tracks, which is long Denver's iconic punk rock or alternative record store. And we've got Twain Foster, a.k.a. MC Earl Gravy, long time in the Denver hip-hop scene. And I met Twain years ago at Sundell Research. We'll be talking about Sundell today, too, I'm sure.
Best shitty job ever.
I worked there, too, actually.
Oh, really? Yes! Another Sundellian has come home roost.
Yeah, where all the freaks work, right? Yeah.
You know, Joseph Namari just passed away.
I did not
he
know
He did.
That.
I mean, it's been a few months, but
Joseph,
he did.
We're losing more Sundellians than we're gaining, but we are happy to gain you, to know you.
Yes, thank you for joining the fold. We'll have to send you an invite to the Sundell Research Alumni Facebook
There's
page.
Is there really?
Sundellians. There totally is.
It's a page.
There totally is.
It's a thing.
Pardon me. So let's begin in the order of arrival. I think Taylor was the first to show up today. And
I thought it was late.
No, you were not. You were early today. and let's see what's going on in your life lately, Taylor.
I'm on break. I'm waiting to go and do the Norman Renaissance Fair, Medieval Fair. It's 44th year.
Hmm. That's in Oklahoma?
In Oklahoma, yes. I've cornered the market of sand art and candles in Oklahoma.
Is there a difference between a medieval fair and a Renaissance fair?
No.
Yes.
Costuming,
a
little bit
branding?
Of costuming.
It's a branding
but it's
issue?
Like the same
kind of thing.
Concept. Is it like Comic-Con?
Yeah.
Where you can't call it a Comic-Con unless it's in San Diego.
Comic-Con light.
Yeah, it's like a con of some kind, like Dragon-Con and Norman-Con. And
my friend put on Waxicon.
Waxicon.
Yeah.
Oh.
Wow.
If one year, survived 1 year.
I mean, all types of wax, or?
Yes, we make wax hands and candles. Well, you make your own candles.
Can't make your own wax hand, but you can make your own wax candle, that's for sure.
Only you can make your own wax hand, that's what we say.
That's awesome, man. So I have a question. As a black man in America, I've only been to one Renaissance fair, and I didn't have a bad time. I mean, you know, the turkey wings and legs and great food fair.
Right.
But, I didn't appreciate being called a Tawny Moore.
A Tawny Moore?
The whole time I was at the the Ren Festival for, you know, you have these people that stay in character the whole time. And
right.
They're from the Renaissance. So the fact that I was a Tawny Moore the whole time, I had to go home and look up what a Tawny Moore was when I came out of there.
Well, there you go.
It's a Tawny Moore. Should I be offended?
Now, where did you go?
Like,
where,
right off.
What state was this?
This
that
was
you
in
went?
Colorado. The,
it,
like
it's a Colorado
90,
fair.
99. I think it was right around 99. I was living with the at the shit house with our friends.
Yeah,
we did everything. We did Y2K that year, and we did a Ren Festival.
Well, I've been doing fairs about 35 years, and I've probably seen a dozen black people at the show.
We need to get more brothers involved in the Renaissance Festival. Blacksmithing or something. I don't know if we can get in there, but I noticed that was one of the few... The blacker people.
That's a good point.
They're at the Renaissance.
Yeah.
Well, isn't the Renaissance Fair like trying to recreate like that time period in Europe? Like, what would the Renaissance period be like in Africa
ideally.
Or any like you know any other place? They might be more interesting. Like the fairs to have.
It was ideally.
Yeah, it's a fine line between what seems racist and what's just sort of like appropriate to the times.
Well, I mean, like I said, it's just, you know, you got the flavored nuts, and, you know, everybody likes that, you know? I mean, I would like flavored
there
nuts, you know,
like
almonds and
a
things like that.
Of Moors.
But that's what I was saying, like, I don't know if there's a. There's enough of us that want to go to the Renaissance Festival to I guess, you know, validate having it. I don't know. It was, I went once, and it was because I was dating a girl who I was interested in. I was like, yeah, I could do this. Tights? Yeah. All day? Yeah.
I think it's an interesting way to make a living in this modern era for people who don't want to join a corporation or be, you know,
definitely.
Otherwise employed, to be able to travel around and sort of play act and
outside
DIY arts like wax hands. You make wax hands and you make giant puppets too. You can talk about that a little bit. What's going on with
the puppets
right now? Tawain might like.
That might be my end. The giant puppets.
Well, I think I have 99 subscribers on my YouTube channel right now.
Oh man!
But I haven't. Posted a video in almost 3 years.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
But how to make giant puppets though? Or just the,
yeah,
the wax?
And the puppets making, you know, talking in the video.
Nice. I'm all about it.
John, what's going on in your day-to-day?
Well, I just thought of a couple things. One, I just want to say that the Cinco de Mayo, the People's Fair, and the Taste of Colorado, they're all the same thing, is that right?
Basically.
Seems
it's
like.
The same
turkey
food.
Legs,
same
Indian
food.
Tacos,
yes.
And Bud Light.
Same location.
Yeah, same location.
You've hit on the trifecta of outdoor festivals in Colorado.
Twain got me thinking about those turkey
legs. That's pretty much it.
But really, it all started with Renaissance fairs. Mm-hmm. The big fair idea. Because a lot of these fairs are 40-plus years old now.
Did the Renaissance fair come out of the hippie movement?
Well, kind of. It was these about six people in a room one night.
No, it makes sense.
Kind of
it's
talking.
What, 70s, right? 40 years, 80, you know, 1980s or whatever. You know, the hippies didn't have anything else to do. You know,
so this is cool, man. This is like the way the hippie generation has survived, by like costuming themselves in medieval attire.
The ones that didn't become boomers.
Oh,
but it's
that.
Still, but it's like imbalanced. There should definitely be room for everybody. It shouldn't be like a white.
Well, I think it's the true boomers or the true hippies, like the people that were counterculture, found a way to stay counterculture, and the people that were just hiding out in that hippie garb. Went and became boomers, you know? Like,
That's valid. That's valid.
You know, I mean, I just think...
Hey, David. Hey, Sasha.
I think that's what happens in every scene or wherever we're at.
Yeah, that's kind of true, sir. Thanks for coming. This is David Heska Wombly-Wyden, an author, Spotted Tail, and he just wrote one called Winter Counts. And this is his son, Sasha. Recently survived a shooting in the STEM Academy.
Wow.
This is Twayne Foster. This is John Kugler, Kilgore Books. You should know Dave. And this is Audrey Turco-Potts. This is our engineer, Neil. And that's Chris Barker, our Ed McMahon. And this is Taylor Grant. And we're all here just talking about life in Denver. You were in the middle of saying something about Cinco de Mayo, and or no, you were finished with that. Just
I was
saying
finished
it's all
with that,
kind of
but
the same
I do
thing
have a question for
legs.
Taylor about.
Yeah, cool.
Is there much crossover between so-called carnies, people that are putting up carnivals and things, and the Renaissance workers?
Well, it's a little different.
Yeah,
it's a little different. There's a little bit, though. I think the Louisiana Fair was started by people who were carnies. Now, I've never been there, but so and that's probably a 20-year-old show. So there's a tie-in. I like to go to the carnivals when they're in town, like when I'm in Texas or whatever, at a show, and there's a pop-up one in a thing.
Carnivals, go.
In a parking lot.
Are
you
closer, like, are there more people that cross over to, like, LARPing, things like that, from the Renaissance?
No.
LARPing doesn't pay.
That would make sense.
I don't think
LARPing is really...
People who work
a friend of mine does LARPing birthday
professional
parties.
LARPer.
Yeah.
I want to see that business card, the professional LARPer.
Society for Creative Anachronism. Have you heard of that? I think that's a precursor to LARPing.
Oh. Well, no, LARPing is more millennial, isn't it? Like, I would think... More millennials or younger people are into LARPing.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Than the Renaissance right. Festival, know. it's like I don't do that. I LARP.
We really joust.
Yeah, we really joust. Surely you joust.
Surely you joust. So what's going on with you, Dave? Anything new?
Well, it's great to be back here again, and it's my second appearance because I believe. That probably in the history of podcasting, I may have been the biggest screw-up perhaps ever because we had a wonderful, like perhaps the greatest conversation that has existed in the history of conversing. And we had it all down. And then as we were leaving, I believe it was me, hit the power button, thus erasing perhaps... It was a conversation that would have gone down through the ages, really. I mean...
Couldn't remember the greatest conversation
decades later, they'd be talking about that conversation, but it is gone.
Seriously.
And I do apologize, and I'm sorry, dude. So I'm keeping far away from all the equipment right now.
You know what?
It's a pleasure
to be
back.
Dave? I think it was that this stuff is usually on this end... And Neil is a new engineer, and for some reason all the stuff was on the wrong end of the table.
Well,
I think that's why it was supposed to be on that end, because it's close to the outlet.
I'm pretty sure
so don't blame yourself.
I do blame myself.
Right?
You're coming back.
You're most kind, and I think it was just my natural
clumsiness,
you know. Because honestly, they were chasing me out. They had, like, brass knuckles and bats. They were going to take their revenge on me, and I, which is, of course, the subject of my book as a segue here.
Great book.
So Winter Counts is the first Native American literary thriller. It's being published by Echo HarperCollins on August 25th. Thank you. And so it's quite a ways out, but it's been on American Library Journal's most anticipated books of 2020. It was just chosen. I don't know. It's getting some good reviews, some good buzz. Couple of movie studios are like sniffing around and all that, and I should mention that this is happening as well for Colorado listeners. I'll be on a panel of the Mountain and Plains Independent Booksellers Conference, the annual conference in Golden, April 9th from 11 to 12:15. So I'll be the keynote along with Lawrence Wright, who won the Pulitzer Prize a few years ago, Avi, a children's book author who won the Newbery Award, Len Vlahos, who I guess owns the Tattered Cover, and me. I won the fifth grade high jump championship at Crawford Elementary School in Aurora, Colorado, and so I really feel that I deserve to be on the stage with all of those people. So anyway, so I'm thrilled to be here, and Winter Counts.
Don't miss it.
Great book. thank you. I got him an arc.
No spoilers.
No spoilers.
I wouldn't dare.
I got. Is there a Cliff Notes version of this yet? I usually keep my reading under 200 pages graphic novel.
There is an audiobook. One of the coolest things about the publishing process that I didn't know is I get to choose the actor that narrates my book. And so they sent me all these clips of different actors. And I chose a native actor. So we're Lakota. We're enrolled members of the Sichonga Lakota Nation, my son and I over here. And so I insisted that it be a Native actor. And so they gave me three. So I went, he's a Canadian First Nations actor named Daryl Dennis. Mm-hmm. He's been in various TV shows up in Canada, and he narrated my friend Tommy Orange's book, They're There. And so he's a wonderful actor. So he's going to narrate it. And then so for people like me, whose vision is getting steadily worse, I also just sold the book to Thorndike Large Print. So now you'll be able to get it as well with exceptionally large print, which is where I'm headed to as well. So anyway, so you can get it in a variety of formats.
Question about exceptionally large print. How large is the exceptionally large print? Like, what are we talking here? Like,
Matt, I don't really know, but you know, I'm thinking.
Can I see
I'm thinking
the street? I'm thinking like, is there a guy that turns the page?
I am all in favor of that. I'm saying like eye chart size.
It's a 4,000-page book in large print.
Can you see it from space?
Seriously.
But we have a bookstore owner here. I'll give just a brief clip of what the book is about without any spoilers. So the book is about a hired vigilante named Virgil Wounded Horse. So what is going on is, on Native American reservations, a lot of people don't know this, about 75% of all crimes go unpunished. So there's a law that was passed called the Major Crimes Act. The Major Crimes Act says that any felonies that happen on the reservation, even if they catch the perpetrator, must be handed over to the FBI.
And
federal prosecutors. But the federal prosecutors only prosecute, they decline to prosecute about 75% of all crimes. So you've got a child molester, you've got a murderer, they've got him in custody. The feds say, sorry, we're not going to prosecute this, and he goes free. So when that happens, private enforcers, like my guy, they really exist on reservations, you can hire these people to go out and get some street justice.
Superheroes.
So, in a way. And so my guy, he charges $100. So somebody rapes your little kid, or rapes your wife or your sister, and gets free. So he charges $100 for each bone he breaks and each tooth he knocks out. And so he is the hero, but he has sort of he's grappling with the morality of his profession, and there are lots of subplots in there, and he's also the caretaker of his 14-year-old nephew named Nathan, who's not based on my son here. It's based on my other son. I have another son called David, and he's this one is an angel, but David has proven to be more of a challenge in the parenting arena. And so I based a lot of my stuff with my son David. But anyway, so it's a fun book, and I'm thrilled to be here. And I have a kids' book out as well called Spotted Tail. Yeah. I'll be in Nashville next week signing copies of Spotted Tail at the Public Library Association. I'll be signing copies of this as well. So awesome. They're starting to fly me out, but it's just great to be here and great to meet some new folks.
Super cool.
Awesome.
So, Twain, I realize that I've got some of your music here on my phone.
Yeah. I guess we'll start with...
play an excerpt from The Struggle.
Yeah. I just wanted to, just before we get into the music part, to keep segueing.
Yeah, sure.
From my man here. I've started the public speaking circuit as well. I have an engagement at Rice University coming up on April 14th, which is my birthday. So go down to Houston, get shit-faced. And it's my welcome to the public speaking world comes a totally different way probably than most people. I got kidney disease 7 years ago. Before that, not to toot my own horn, but I was doing pretty well fiscally, and everything was great. And then I got sick in Colorado. It was an at-will state. And the company I worked for, which I was making pretty good money, $2,500 a month, selling AOL to old racist people in the South, stuff like that, they decided to let me go before I got 6 months. I was like four days away from hitting the 6 month mark, which means I got full benefits and everything like that. So had to figure out what to do on disability budget. Went from 25 to close to $3,000 a month to $750 to live off. And this is right around the same time as the weed legalization hit, so all the rents went sky high, and I'd never been on public assistance, my adult life. You know, as a kid, I was, you know, we were poor. We got government cheese. But, you know, when I was old enough to, you know, get a job, I never didn't know that world, how to apply for assistance, how to do any of that stuff. I didn't know any of the ins and outs. And, you know, you have to learn how to be poor. You have to learn how to shop for bargains. You know, you can't get the name brand cereal. You got to get Cocoa Roos. No more Cocoa Puffs, you know. Unless Cocoa Puffs are on special, then you're like, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and spend that extra dollar to get them Cocoa Puffs as opposed to the Roos. You know, so, I mean, just that was something that I had to learn, and it took, I'm still learning that process 7 years later. But I have a friend who is teaching humanities at Rice, and she wanted me to come down and talk to her students. And
super cool.
Starting to do that. I'm trying to get up at CCD, talk to a couple of professors about the same type of thing. And thinking about doing an audio book, or at least How to Be Poor for Dummies. You know, when you don't know how to be poor, to teach you how to be poor. Sure. Because, you know, I started with you at Sundell back in 98. You know, the best shitty job ever.
Hey, Courtney.
You going to tighten up?
I think there are chairs, are there? There might be room. Oh, there's a chair right there.
Is this empty?
Yeah.
Is this seat taken?
Thanks for coming. This is Courtney Collins, a local poet. Just interrupting you for a second. Go back to your narrative, please. This is Twayne Foster.
Where was I? So, you know, we had to learn how to, you know, deal with not having the resources and finding the resources for help. And it has trickled down to, you know, every aspect of my life, you know, in the last 10 years. And it kind of, you know, colors what you do, you know, like, you know, there's certain shows that'll come into town. If you look, there's deals for all kinds of stuff. You just have to, it's like coupon cutting for life.
Interesting.
You know, just like, you just got to learn to, you know, oh, I'll just go the second day because maybe, you know, Comic-Con, you know, you go the last day as opposed to all 3 days, you know, you'll maybe somebody will give you a pass from their 3 day. They're over it, you know.
Right.
Just kind of hang out and just a lot of lurking involved with having no money. You have more time than money, so you just lurk out and see what happens.
Have you ever looked into Atlantis community yet?
I do. I know all about Atlantis. Okay. They're great.
Yeah,
you know, they help you. They do give you resources. Mm-hmm. However, I'll say this about Atlantis. You have to be your own advocate.
True.
Like, you can't expect them to just put the stuff on the table. You have to go out. They'll show you this is where the stuff is. You have to go out and do the legwork yourself.
That's true.
But, yeah, I'm familiar with them. You know, we both have had the talks over the years since we've been at Sundell about how Denver has changed and Macon's meat, and it's become extremely... I mean, I don't know. Maybe am I the only person that's noticed that? Or does anyone else have any of the same issues? Or if how...
Well, I'm having neighbor trouble right now, and I feel like I've gotten myself into this low-rent apartment, and now I'm in this, like, poorly insulated acoustic, terrible acoustics, and you hear all the neighbors all the time, and, like, the one guy's crazy, and he blames the other neighbors, but I hear him yelling, and he says he's yelling at the other, and it's just like this insoluble solution, but it feels like it's coming close to some sort of conclusive resolution. Dare I hope?
That's a short story, man.
I've written a lot of it already. I'm telling you, but that's the closest I can come to an economic crunch right now. I'm eating cheaply. I mostly eat ramen with vegetables and
egg,
a little bit.
Throw a little egg in there, man. That's gonna make
that
ramen
good idea.
Stretch, bro.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, that's, you know, without. Food banks are great because you get like day old donuts, and they're great in coffee. They just are. I mean, tea, any kind of milk, you know, the donuts are gonna.
They resurrect.
Yeah, they have a second life. You know, you'll be able to live off of those. It's just like I said. I moved from DC like in the 90s, which DC has never been cheap to live, but. It's like almost more money to live here now than it is to live on some places in the East Coast and in the West Coast. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's definitely square footage issues here that I've been coming across, and, you know, what's the solution for that? You know, do we do artist co-ops? You know?
Well, I've heard that the proposed solution from the up tops is to, like, have more people living in apartments, which is a stupid idea, but, like, you know, your double housing apartment would now have four people, and, like, your studio would have two or three people.
Well, I see
it
all these...
doesn't sound like it's going to work.
I see all these luxury apartments in the sky, you know, just sitting empty.
All over the place.
You know, but then I see, like, all this, you know, I live 18th and Chestnut, which is, used to be slum village, wasn't even part of Denver, it was just sprouted up in the last 4 or 5 years, and you see it every day. You see the hordes of people that live at the river going to the river at night. Wow. You know, you see the hordes of construction workers leaving that area at 7 o'clock, coming in at 7 a.m. You see the people that actually live in that area, walking their dogs at 5. It's like three different shifts of people that you see, and then me. I'm just the observer. I'm the Uatu of it all, the watcher of it all. I just document it, smoke my cigarettes, and you know, just go back upstairs to my little, it's a subsidized unit. But you have all three of those classes, I guess. The homeless drifter class. I don't know what that's called. I guess the river people. But then you have, I guess, the upwardly mobile yuppie types, and then you have the grunts, you know, that are building these apartments in the sky that we're moving on up to, that no one is moving on up to.
That's a great vantage point that you've got for those three communities.
Well, you know the new cranes, the three purple cranes? I live like a block and a half from the purple cranes, and it's kind of like, at night, I look out my window, and some nights they'll be lit up. Some nights part of the crane won't be lit up. It's like, it's a good barometer of the city, what's lit up and what I can see. Because I used to be able to see Coors Field, but that's a myth now. I can't see Coors Field because there's so much construction down there. Just so much.
I always thought that was, like, a really awesome part of living in a city, though, is that you have, like, the strata coexisting versus, like, suburbia, where it's like a clusterfuck of people who all make the same money and look the same and live in the same places or whatever. And that's like, I understand that might be really comforting for some people, but I've, you know, that's not real.
Right.
Like, that's not the human condition writ large, right?
I mean, I love the fact that I get to see those people, the different people, but what I guess bums me out on it is that you see them at a certain time, and that's it. Like, you see the river people
in different shifts.
You know, it's like they're not all coexisting. It's just like the river people come at 8 o'clock like a Walking Dead herd. They go to their river area, and then you have the, you know, the girls with the dogs and the, you know, matching hoodies with their their animals, and they're in. They have a sign now. Only service animals in the King Supers, because everyone's just taking advantage of bringing, you know, their Fido.
Poodles.
Yeah. how much for the strawberries today? You know, like, so you have that interaction, but it's very limited interaction. Like, I'll sit on the bench and I'll see.
Expectations.
Yeah, it's like, just kind of like, maneuvering. It's not interaction, it's just maneuvering around each other. Right. And then if there is an interaction, it's usually based around a holiday or the Super Bowl.
And just very small
really
talk
great
like
day
holidays,
down
right?
in Lodo. The Super Bowl was awesome. Everyone talked to each other. Everyone was in a good mood because it was the Super Bowl. Everyone full of food. The food flowed. Yeah. The dumpsters were overrun with bags for the homeless, you know. So it was a great time to be a Lodoian, I guess. I don't know.
In that district?
In the district of Lodo.
So Courtney, how's your life been? What's been going on in your poetry life lately?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming. This is Courtney Collins.
Nice to see all of you here.
Indeed.
So what's happening? What's happening? I got some rejections today.
Oh.
That's always, you know, boy, you get used to it after a while. It's just.
Are you someone who just consistently submits to magazines?
Yeah. I always have something floating around out there. God, you know, I went through a period last fall where I got so many rejections that I actually withdrew some of my submissions.
Wow.
And on Submittable, I'm just like, you know, I'm just having too rough a go of it right now. My ego is a little too fragile. Mm. But then I got accepted somewhere else. But so, you know, that's just the nature of the beast.
Sure.
You know, I mean, that just goes with the territory. I did a, I was invited to participate in Loveland in a project. The Loveland Museum of Art is having a 100-year centennial celebration of women's suffrage.
Oh.
And 30 poets were asked to write an ekphrastic piece based on works of art this exhibit. So I got to do that, and that was great fun. I loved it.
I saw your post. It's a beautiful picture, too.
That sculpture.
Sculpture, yes.
Yeah, I got assigned a sculpture, and I didn't know until I saw it how big it was, because I just got a photo of it to write my poem. But so that was fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's always fun stuff.
Right on. How about the writing process, apart from any, like, submitting or acceptance? How's writing going?
Well, in 2020, I kind of made, I'm not a big resolutions person.
Mm-hmm.
But I, you know, last year my big, I'm not even a goal person, so
right.
I'm a process person.
Sure.
So let me put it that way. The process I was going to try to pay attention to in 2019 was being curious instead of judgmental. And so for 2020, the thing I wanted to pay attention to is listening to my intuition 100%. 100% of the time. And then I made some separate writing things I'd like to see happen this year. And one of the things is paying more attention to revision.
Right.
I'm a person who really groans at revision. It's really a chore for me. So I two things. I wanted to commit more to the editing process. And I wanted to challenge myself to... I already read a lot of poetry, but read some things that challenge me a little bit more. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, that was a wonderful answer. Who are some poets are you reading lately that you find challenging?
Actually, I am a big fan, and I've been reading her a while, but she's an older poet, Marge Piercy.
Mm-hmm.
She's a feminist. I don't know if she would consider herself a feminist poet, but I sort of see it that way. It's like, it's challenging, but I just love her work.
All right.
She's a big one for me. I like reading her work, and I'm trying to think of... another one I'd like to get really familiar with is, I hope I don't butcher the pronunciation of her name. But Khadija Queen.
All right.
Yeah.
I think that's it.
Did I say her name right?
I think so.
I've read a little bit of her work. She came to Greeley when I was living up in northern Colorado, and I had another commitment that night, and I was super bummed I had to miss her reading at University of Northern Colorado. She's somebody I'd like to get a lot more familiar with, just based on the few pieces of hers I've read.
She is based locally. Am I right about that?
Yeah. Is she? I know she's done some stuff with Lighthouse.
Because I'm pretty sure I know a good friend of hers. You know Susie Q. Smith?
I've never seen her.
I think she knows Khadija, and I could maybe get an introduction.
Khadija's a friend of ours. And so,
Yeah,
she's now a professor at CU Boulder. She just started.
Okay.
And she has a memoir out, too.
No kidding.
Yeah. So, yeah. Khadija's great and is doing lots of great stuff right now.
That's wonderful. I didn't know she was teaching at CU now.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Thank you.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, Taylor, you haven't spoken in a while. What's the most interesting thing that happened to you this week?
This week?
Take a minute. Think about it.
I don't know. Really nothing. Nothing that I could, that was...
What was funny? A funny thing happened? Or
nothing really funny.
Something to make you angry? Anything of note? All right, well,
I have a question for Dave.
All right, what happened to you, Chris?
I have a question for Dave.
Oh, perfect.
Did you have to when you were doing research for your book, did you have to actually meet these enforcers? Or how did you flesh that character out?
I did not actually meet them. Okay. There's not a ton of research.
I can imagine they probably wouldn't come out of the woodwork.
Yeah, they actually exist. There's not a ton. What I did was I talked to people who knew the enforcers on my reservation, which is the Rosebud Reservation. And so I talked to people that know of them. Obviously, I took huge liberties, to make it more exciting and dramatic and fun. So, no, I've not met any of them in person. I'd like to, you know. I'd like to accompany them. So, mm-hmm. And I signed a two-book deal with HarperCollins. And so,
right along.
Fight along.
A team-up, if you will.
I signed a two-book deal with HarperCollins. And so the sequel... I have to figure what direction the guy is going to take. So I am planning to go to the reservation and do a little more research. Plus, I like to take my boys there for our native spiritual ceremonies. We go every August for sure for our most sacred ceremony called the Sundance. So we go up there and hang out. They hate leaving. Well, this one's fine with it, but my older son doesn't like leaving the city so much because there's not much to do on the reservation. But I force him. Thanks for asking. Yeah.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, is the Rosebud, is that Sitting Bull's?
It's not. That's Standing Rock. Rosebud, we're kind of like the lesser of the Lakota reservations because we don't have any famous Native people in our background. And so that's why I just wrote this children's book, which just got released in November. Our famous leader is called Spotted Tail. But nobody's heard of him, because he was like the first one to be like, the whites... They got some good guns and stuff. Probably we should, make some peace with them first. As opposed to Crazy Horse. He's like, I will fight till the last, my last breath. So he's not, a sexy leader. But, we're, really, admirable, I guess, But he did write by our people. And so nobody had written a kid's book for him. So I have an early reader with some really gorgeous artwork that is out from Raycraft Books. It just got released in November because nobody had written about him. So I wrote, I'm not trained in this form of kids' literature, but I wrote a kids' book, and I donated all of the money to the reservation. I got no money out of this. Instead, I bought Sasha Seen, and we have boxes and boxes of the books at my house. Mm-hmm. And I sent a copy out of my own expense to every school and library on the 7 Lakota reservations. Just because, thank you. Because obviously times are tough. I grew up, what you were saying really resonated with me, and times are tough. And a lot of families on the reservation can't afford $10 for a book. So I've just given it to them for free.
And just seeing themselves represented in literature and just...
Yeah.
It's just really important,
Well, thank you.
All I have is Power Fist to represent my, my clique.
Were you at Jaipur? Did you do a presentation at Jaipur?
Yeah, that was me.
That was awesome. Thank you. I was at that presentation.
Oh, thank you.
And I just remember being on fire. I have a law degree, which I don't use. I was ill-suited to the legal profession. However, my focus was on Native American law. That was my passion. In law school, so your presentation, I was just like...
Was it the one with Kent Nurburn or John Ralston Saul? I did two there, doesn't matter.
So it
probably
was
more law stuff. John Ralston, the Canadian guy.
The Canadian guy.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah, that was just a tremendous presentation.
You. Oh, you're most kind.
Yeah, wonderful.
All right, I love that one. Got some kind of unexpected reunions. That's happened every time.
Three degrees of separation. I have a Kilgore story.
Excellent.
If people care.
Sure.
I moved to Denver in 97, or officially in 98. I was AmeriCorps, like a domestic peace corps. Mm-hmm. Came here. My only Denver pre-knowledge of before that was John Elway as the Broncos quarterback, and Robin Williams, Mork and Mindy. Right. You know, that was all I knew. You know, and it was like, it's going to be cold there, brother. You don't want to go to Denver. I was like, yeah, I got it. But Wax Trax has been there for years.
Yeah.
And then I think it was Wax Trax 3. Are you guys where Wax Trax 3?
It was, Wax it was called Trax Across 2. The Tracks.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's where you guys are. Mm-hmm. So that is... That went away, like I guess like 6 years ago or something like that. I don't know.
Gosh, longer than 20 years ago.
Okay, oh, wow. Whenever that went away, I was living on 13th in Ogden, right there, and someone was like, "They're gonna put a bookstore in there," and I was like, "Just what we need—another crazy, wacky bookstore on the hill. Like, where are the crackheads gonna do? Where are they gonna go?" But it was, to my surprise, it's stayed there. It's been there for a long time. And it's actually, I think, acted as adhesive to that neighborhood. Because my friend owns the tattoo shop across the street, Landmark and Beauty Bar, was there for years. And that's, it eases me to walk past Kilgore and see that. Only three people in there ever, but you know. But there are consistently three people in there, and I don't have to. I know that niche is filled.
I'm also pleased and encouraged by your continuing success. Is there any?
Yeah. Thank you.
Is there any like danger?
Secure? The only reason Kilgore and Wax Trax are still around is because the guys at Wax Trax own that building.
Mm.
Truly. It would be condos with Starbucks down on the bottom level. No parking, of course, because people use public transportation. You don't need to provide parking for new buildings. By the way, those new buildings in Capitol Hill, just as recently as 12 years ago, I think it was still about $10 a square foot for rent, and it's crept up to between 20 and 30.
I've
seen rents as high as $30 a square foot. Crazy. Anyway, that's the real key to Kilgore's success is Wax Trax owning the building, being our kind landlords, generous landlords. But it is nice to be right by the record store. We do, you know, of course, share clientele.
Sure.
Although sometimes people walk into the bookstore thinking they're in the record store, and then their face
some new form
takes on some kind of
what are these things?
Horrible countenance. Yeah, they get scared and start backing out. Like one of the books might jump out.
Oh,
the
it's cool.
But yeah, Kilgore's will celebrate 12 years in June, and I'm the second owner. It'll be 5 years for me this summer.
Nice.
I used to work for Dan and Luke, who left one at a time for other places. Dan's in D.C. and Luke is in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, they sold the shop to me, which I came to find out that is it's a pretty common story in bookstores. Oftentimes they get handed down to employees.
Right.
So, and those guys are doing well for themselves. I'll just put in a little plug for them.
Yeah, Luke's got the Toad Vine Books now, right?
Luke has opened another bookstore in Berkeley, Michigan, just north of Detroit, called Toad Vine Books. Been open almost a year, and he's got great stuff out there, so if you're in the area. And then Dan Stafford is still publishing under the Kilgore name comics. Internationally, really. So,
nice.
And he still goes to all the comic fests, and he was coming out here for Dink, but he went and got a teacher certificate. Now he's teaching middle school full time. So that's cut into his free time.
Let me put in a plug. If anybody's listening, they haven't been to Kilgore's, you should run. Do not walk. Run over there because they have
Definitely.
The best curated selection of like fiction, nonfiction, and some of the best comics and zines collection you're going to find around. Like, you're carrying that Bob, Rob, and Dina book, aren't you? Cowtown Punks, and the sequel, too.
Yeah, definitely.
So it's not easy to get. And so for Denver natives like myself, you know, that were involved in the punk scene back in the day, it's great to see those books. And just your selection in your store is just really needed and much appreciated.
Thank you.
Yes. Kilgore Books. Don't miss it.
Kilgore.
So, Haven't heard much from you in the last few minutes, Audrey. What's been going on in your life this week? What's the most interesting thing?
There has not been. I mean, the week just started. So well, the week I previous. Need several more days to get up to anything interesting. I don't know that there was a lot interesting happening last week either. I'm kind of in hibernation for the winter.
I'm glad that you could all come out here today to join me at the podcast, because I know it's that time of year, and I generally would be hibernating this time of day, too. Chris, you got anything to say?
What's
any news? Any jokes?
I'm here to back you up.
All right. You know any good jokes, Taylor?
Yeah. Yeah, we're always telling good jokes around the dip tank.
Yeah.
Let's see. Do you want to hear a joke about a broken pencil?
Yeah.
Why?
It's
pointless.
Good one. My son likes this one. That one.
Dad jokes. Are these carny jokes or dad carny jokes?
I heard a joke about terrible puns at the last Dave Wyden appearance.
Oh, that was you.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a Sasha joke. You probably know it better, but you seemed to. But it was something he had done where he'd written terrible puns, TEARABLE, puns at the bottom of a piece of paper, little strips you could tear off, terrible puns. That's
funny. Sasha had he had an exciting event. So you want to tell about it?
So I'm going to geek out for a second. On Saturday, I had a Rubik's Cube competition, and it was fun.
Whoa.
So, basically, you just go there and solve Rubik's Cubes with a timer. And this is my third one, and I did well.
Whoa.
Also, three state records were broken at that competition.
Not by you.
Yeah, not by me. But an 11-year-old got the first ever Colorado sub 1 minute 3x3 blindfolded solve.
They solve with a blindfold.
Whoa.
So yeah. they do
less
it.
Than a minute.
Yeah, it was the most bizarre thing.
They get
I've ever
to
seen.
Look at it. And
they
then
look at
they
it first. They memorize the moves, and then they put like hoods on and blindfolds, and then they do it by memory. But Sasha, what was your fastest? What was your fastest solve?
Oh yeah,
sighted. What was yours?
So my fastest overall is 9.19, but at that competition I got 9.98, which was really good for me because it was at a competition.
Great.
So yeah.
I don't want to say. I think these guys that were here last time know this, but this is particularly important for us because a little less than a year ago, Sasha was in the STEM school, Highlands Ranch building, when the shooters came in.
Mm-hmm.
And he was two classrooms away. And he told the story last time before I erased it. And you know, it's been a little bit of a rough year for us because two classrooms away, he heard the shots that killed Kendra Castillo.
Mm-hmm.
And he had to hide in a closet and, you know, with his teacher holding a tennis racket for protection.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, so it's been a weird year for us. So for him to be out and filled with such joy at solving Rubik's Cubes, you know, is nice to hear. So that's kind of the moral
amazing.
Of the story.
That's amazing. Dorky, but amazing. I'm going to let you know. But it's awesome. I wish I had a Rubik's Cube.
Did you have a phase? You must have had a phase.
No, hip-hop.
There's nothing wrong with being a dork. Look at me. I mean, there's a lot of things wrong with me, but one of them is being a dork.
No, I'm not dork bashing. Don't get me wrong. I have my geeky ways, you know. There's just levels to everything. I think I'm too cool to care about stuff enough to go. Like, that would be cool to go to a Rubik's Cube, but I was like, inside, I'm just insecure about how cool I am.
Can I
pull that off? I don't think I can
pull
it off.
Well, speaking of going to things that you don't really want to go to, and public speaking, you're in public speaking. I've been in Toastmasters, for about a year and a half.
So you guys just eat toast?
And I usually don't ever go beyond just the weekly meetings, but they have like these satellite things. Like, it's a big contest here at this place and that place, and I usually never go because I feel like I'm too cool to care about going to these things.
Because I eat toast. But
the one
I'm
that's coming
really
up on Thursday is kind of in my neighborhood. So I'm going to go for the first time to this weird event where apparently, like, there are really, you know, high-powered speeches given and people from all over the region come in.
It's just
a
pulpit, basically.
Does everyone get drunk if you're just eating
I hope
toast
so. I don't know.
Because I mean, imagine that the toast would get better as the night wore on.
Well, that's the origin of the phrase, actually. When you make a toast, it actually comes, you know that?
Well,
comes
toast
from
toast,
the old
yeah.
Roman days when they just thought it wasn't good enough anymore without a little tang in it, and they started putting toast in their wine. And they would lift up the glass and like, here's to so and so.
Oh, they would actually put actual toast.
Yeah,
oh,
literally.
Wow.
Yeah.
I thought it was just like, yeah, let's get another one over here.
Yeah. but yeah. So if you ever feel like coming and sitting in on one of the meetings, they're quite amusing. And sometimes
I
give
you know
good
me
speeches.
like my whole thing is now,
you can come to three of them for free.
Oh, before I have to
before
be indoctrinated. You know, any group that'll have me, I don't want to be a member of. But you know,
Charlie Chaplin.
But I'll check it out. Maybe one
day. It might be worth your.
Maybe in the summer,
a little amusement. You know. Yeah, in the good weather.
In the good weather.
And after three attendances, you have to pay.
Well, there's
to
this. They charge
toast
you
people?
To join the Toastmasters
what comes,
club.
Do you get a
sounds
card?
Like a pyramid
you
scheme.
Get,
yeah. I don't know what's the
it pretty much just sounds
to
like you're paying to
the
get
thing,
friends, which I'm not
you,
adverse to.
I mean,
it is basically like that.
Yeah.
But then we also have contests, you know, at like the Anschutz campus. The next one's at this place. The Miracle Center. I don't know.
So
where
you
it
can
is.
Go all
I
city with the Toastmasters.
The exchange
masters,
being on the table, you know, like just very, like you know, apparent about the exchange, like monetary exchange for friendship.
Yeah, or, I don't think they quite say that, but that is basically how it goes.
It sounds very pyramid.
It's like for like social interaction.
It's
but
like,
you're also,
where do
you're
I sign?
Also, they're also
that?
Training
work?
You in like techniques of addressing
work, right?
The crowd.
I think it's friend work. I'm pro
basically,
friend work. Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
Well,
there's
you
levels.
Know, we,
friend
we,
work. It's not quite like joining the Masons, but.
Ooh, see? So this is like entry level friend work. But if you get to the Masons, that's like pretty.
Then you're going to really have lifetime companions, I bet.
Yeah. That is that
beyond
is
the
advanced.
Grave.
That's
beyond
like pro am friend work.
I had a boyfriend once who told me the Freemason secrets.
Oh,
he shall remain unnamed.
But the secrets remain unnamed, though. As I would like
he told you their secrets.
He probably heard them.
Yeah, he demonstrated the secret things they do with their feet and the things they do with their hands and
like handshakes.
Yeah, handshakes. There was
shakes?
A particular there was a particular thing they do with their feet, though.
Like what? The way they're positioned to give a message, kind of.
Well. That's probably all I can say about it.
Yeah. That raises more questions than I answer. Wow. Yeah. And now, I mean, you know,
just
now
think
I'm thinking
just
of feet
think of all
day.
The secrets that are exchanged on golf courses in the Western world.
Well, my dad, when I was growing up in Nebraska, my dad joined the local, one of the secret societies because he wanted to get in on their pinochle tournament. But
that has got to be the best Nebraskan thing ever.
Yeah, that is
the best.
Like,
he joined a secret society.
To get the
pinochle. He wanted to play pinochle.
Couldn't find a good pinochle game.
All these pinochle games.
Well, I hear the secret society's going to join every Thursday. You just got to join. You just got to qualify.
Yeah.
Well, what does it take? I don't know. You got to memorize this thing and
like,
say some rhymes.
Yeah, they had some living for that. They had some secret handshake, some different things. But, you know, there's not a lot to do in the Sand Hills in Nebraska. I mean, I'm from the sticks. So, you know.
Where are you from?
I'm from Alliance, but I know where the Rosebud.
Alliance?
Yeah, I grew up in Alliance.
Carhenge.
But Carhenge was built.
It's in the book.
Is it?
Yes.
The year after I moved away, Carhenge was built. And Carhenge is about a mile from my childhood home.
Oh,
yes,
I know well.
Is
that 18 or 83? I forget.
Gosh dang it. I can't remember. We moved away when I was like 15. And I can't remember that main drag that goes through Alliance. But
do you all know what Carhenge is?
Yes.
I do.
Everybody knows. Okay.
You should describe it, though, yeah.
Well, if anybody's listening, you know, and they don't know what it is, it's some crazy farmer got this idea in a cornfield to do a replica of Stonehenge with cars. And it is, you've seen it, Sasha,
yeah,
right?
I've seen it.
And it's just a deeply weird thing. So, in
well
my book,
done.
Yeah, but well done.
Yeah,
he did it great, you know.
Still standing.
So, in my book, I have my hero go, and he has a mystical experience at the Carhenge.
Oh, no
so,
kidding.
Gotta be the final battle at Carhenge.
Well, it was when the eclipse a couple of years ago, that eclipse, Carhenge, it went.
It worked.
Oh, really?
Right over Carhenge.
Yeah.
Carhenge was.
Excellent.
I mean, it kind of, you know, I watched, I was about an hour away watching it in Gearing, Nebraska. I didn't want to deal with Carhenge crowds, but it's kind of funny because you can watch a YouTube video of the moment the sky goes dark,
yeah.
And just, it is a little, like, touching. The whole place just
right
is like, just goes like apeshit because they're at Carhenge and...
You gotta go ape shit if you're a car. Ape shit and car hinge hand in hand.
But yeah, it was a huge attraction during that full solar eclipse a couple of years ago.
I bought a Joffle iron.
A what?
Joffle iron.
Oh, tell us about it.
After like 2 years of looking for one.
What is a Joffle iron?
So I was in Indonesia like 2 years ago, and I had the best sandwich I've ever had in my life, and it was called a Joffle.
Mm.
And it's like a grilled cheese sandwich, except like the edges are sealed, so it's like a little...
Cheese pocket?
It's like a hot pocket. It's like, but real and good. Like, and I was like sitting in a rice paddy eating a Joffle, and I'm like, this might be the best food I've ever had.
Wow.
So then I went on this quest for like 2 years to find a Joffle iron, which apparently are like really hard to find. And I finally found one and ordered it, and it came in the mail. And it's like cast iron square with like really long handles on them. And it's two sides, and you put the fixings in it, and then you like screw it together, and it just sits on an open flame and cooks it. I was very impressed. It was delicious.
Pre-George Foreman.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you could make a Joffle in a George Foreman, but I had tried a quesadilla maker, which was kind of like a waffle iron. Mm. So really, you need the Joffle iron. So apparently part of it is in the cast iron.
Wow.
How big is it?
It's like, I don't know, is that like 3x3? Like.
Definitely
yeah.
could be at a
He's
Ren
like,
festival.
Oh yeah, they're everywhere at a Ren festival.
Open flame,
cast
iron,
they serve
bombs
at every
You're
secret
set.
Pinochle society on Earth.
You know, though, I don't know, a sealed off grilled cheese, though, I love when the cheese comes out into the pan and gets a little burnt.
That is really good.
Around the edges,
yeah.
That's my favorite part. So.
I mean, grilled cheese, it's universal.
Yeah.
Come on now.
Come
on now. Who don't like grilled
Joffle
cheese? That's like cornbread.
There was something about it, though, when we were kids and you got hot lunch at school, at least at my school, like the crust, I don't know how they pulled this off, but the crust would be so firm. And then the inside
butter.
Would be so
buttery
and juicy.
Extra
and
butter.
I could never
Margarine
replicate
butter.
That. Margarine.
Extra butter.
Really?
It's extra butter. I'm just letting you know. Just someone that uses a lot of butter, it's extra butter. You just spread the butter on freely. And it's the same thing with pancakes. If you like a hard crust, hard edge pancakes, just extra butter. That's all you
do. One of my young friends is learning to cook, and she texted me, learned the secret to cooking, it's butter. And I was like, yeah. yes, that is absolutely the secret to cooking. The five mother sauces and butter.
You know, you can't go wrong. As a former fat man, I do love butter, but you have to be careful. You can over butter, you know, because, you know, popcorn, no.
I'm challenging
grilled
that
cheese.
Statement.
You can over butter. You can over butter. It won't know until later. You can over butter. That's all I'm gonna say. It's little late. It's a process. We talk about processes.
So it's
process.
A gastric realization.
Well, you know, as we get older, you know, Sasha, you don't have to worry about the over butter. For a long time. But, you know, middle-aged people like myself, like, did I over-butter?
You know what my problem is? Over-hot sauce.
Oh, yeah. Where your lips sauce. Just get just blistery.
It's the process as well. It's fine in the moment. Later, you're like, why did I use half a bottle of that?
Do you do that with wasabi?
I do that with everything. I actually saw me just bought yesterday. I went to the Asian market, and you know those really, really hot ramens that they have the YouTube mm-hmm. videos of people eating? They have those in hot sauce now. Mm-hmm. And I got one, and I made some vegetarian stroganoff, and I put like 5 drops in there and then cried for an hour and a half. But it was worth it and delicious. But
especially
yeah,
in this weather,
cold weather, yeah.
Get a little ramen. Yeah. Extra little hot sauce, it's okay. You're going outside, you know, you don't have to worry about chapstick. You know, just, you're good. But, nah, that after is...
I was in...
Just don't put too much butter on it.
I was in Belize, like, for Thanksgiving, and they have a really interesting hot sauce there that's, like, super hot habanero, but with a carrot base, which is actually delicious. I'm really loving that lately. I've been ordering it online. But I like the sweetness to it, which isn't something I typically like.
A sweet hot sauce.
Well, it's like carrot sweet. What?
Huh. Sriracha's kind of sweet.
Sriracha's just hot. It doesn't have a flavor. Fight me.
It's got sugar.
It's definitely got sugar.
Like, it has a place. Like, if you want to make that, like, spicy mayonnaise for, like, poke, sriracha all day. Like, if you don't want to fuck with the flavor of something... Sriracha all day, because it's just going to add the heat and leave the flavor alone. But if you're looking for a good hot sauce to add flavor, you're not grabbing sriracha. You're grabbing like Jalisco or you know Tapatio or something that has a flavor. Like,
well, I know where I'm going after
heat.
This. Give me some ramen.
By the way, there's a Mexican restaurant chain, at least 2 restaurants called Tapatio here in Denver.
I've been there. I don't think I've been there. I mean, we're so close here to El Taco de Mexico, which is bomb.
I don't think I've been to Tapatio either.
I've been going there since I was like 5. That place is bomb.
That was the best thing about moving to Denver, was the authentic, from where I'm from, restaurants, like Mexican restaurants. Because D.C., you have Taco Bell.
The closest, the further you get towards the East Coast, there are no Mexican restaurants.
No,
try to find Mexican food in New York City, you're like, what the hell is happening?
When I went to Vermont College, there was one little place that opened up. And I think it was called Julio's or something, but it was, you know, it wasn't any good. I don't have much of a story to tell.
It's very mediocre.
I'm just agreeing.
There was a good pizza place there, though, in Montpelier. He and I went to the same school briefly, but we didn't overlap.
Oh.
But I can't remember what the pizza place was. Mm-hmm. Infinite Pie, or I can't remember what it was.
Oh, I remember what you're talking about.
Yeah. And I'm going back there. I'm going to be the visiting writer there in March for just
awesome.
A couple of days.
Awesome.
So I haven't been back to Vermont since I left. But
yeah, I wonder who's going to be on the faculty when you're there.
I don't know, man.
You should, I mean, I don't know. I'll send some messages for specific people if you find out.
Well, I just want to talk to my man with the Renaissance Festival, see if my band can start playing at the RenFest. Like, I don't know if we have lutes or electric guitar or maybe a lyre or something, but I just want to play the Renaissance Festival. I played the Wyoming State Fair. I figure that's
can you read Shakespeare or something?
I could wing it. I'm sure I could do a couple of doffs and bows.
Well, you know, there's been bands that do, you know, pub shanties and stuff that were bands, you know, in real life, and then on the weekend they go out and they put on a costume, stick some feathers in it.
I have an interesting story. You know Nathan Lockram? I also want to say, like, Courtney and David, we, Twain and I know someone who lives in Ayer, Nebraska, A-Y-R, if you're familiar with that place at all.
No.
Small town.
There's a lot of places in Nebraska that are so tiny. They're unincorporated, say, on their street sign. Or
well,
town sign.
What was I about to say before
Nathan
that?
Lockram.
Before I swerved.
Nathan.
Oh, yes, Nathan Lockram. What the hell? What did I say before that? It was really important.
You were living in small town Nebraska, or the...
Before that, though.
Bands? We were talking about bands.
Bands. Oh, yes. Nathan Lockram told me, because he's got all those children, you know, and he was out with...
He's got all those kids.
He's got all those children. He's got 3 of them.
He comes back from the Renaissance.
But he was out with his, two daughters, you know. He takes a lot of outings with his children. He's always posting on Facebook.
Good
so
dad.
He's out,
super dad.
He's out with his two daughters... Somewhere around here, somewhere, you know, outlying district. And they come to a little playground, and they're like, the daughters are playing in the playground. Nathan notices across the fence there's some kind of bluegrass festival, but everyone there is wearing Viking helmets, and it's called the Ulgrass Festival.
Oh, wow.
And maybe, like, Scandinavia, I mean, we don't know. But it led to a conversation where, like, I surmise that maybe the Scandinavian immigrants have all, like, discovered bluegrass over the ages and, like, started this festival. It's
hey, man, there's festival. Like, are there's two really, of you, you can have a festival.
They're probably just kind of Viking fetishists, you know. That's probably mm-hmm. it. But I was encouraged to think that perhaps it had been, like, a, you know, a tradition over the decades for Scandinavian immigrants to get into bluegrass, and they started this whole festival, and it's now in its, like, 20th season. But I don't know that to be true. I just think it's funny that he discovered this bluegrass festival where everyone's dressed as a Viking, and it's called the Ullgrass Festival.
I just want to play
around the
festival.
I've seen it. Have you? Yeah, I've
do you
heard
know
of it.
Do you know anything
yeah.
more about this? Or
no, it sounds very interesting, though. I'd go.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like a weird thing to stumble upon, doesn't it?
Yeah.
A Viking bluegrass festival?
It's very Colorado, that's for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's not going to happen in Detroit. I don't think you can ever come across a Viking festival.
Well, speaking of children, I have to take my leave. It's been so cool talking to everybody. My 15-year-old just got a job at King Soopers, and he's on his shift, and I have to pick him up at 6, and we live down south. And it's his first job ever, so he's a bagger and the carts, they call them buggies. And he had to join the union, too.
Yeah.
So he and I have been doing a lot of talk, because he's angry about having to join the union, because it's about $100 a month, and he gets paid $12 an hour, so it's like eating half of his salary. You know, but I'm like, son, you need to support the union, you know.
Hoffa.
You know.
Claudia was all about the union. Partner. Claudia, our guest at the last podcast, would have been all over that comment.
Yeah.
I'm not to interrupt, and please go on, but she's a big union supporter.
Right on. So anyway, so I have to pick him up from his shift, but it's been great to talk to everybody, and hopefully everything's cool. So yay. So right on.
You got a book
so,
for you here?
Oh, thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Edited by my parents in the 70s.
If I can do anything at Kilgore, here's my card.
Oh, yeah,
so
thank you.
It was a pleasure to meet everybody, and love to
solidarity.
Again.
Yeah,
all right. Thanks for coming back.
Bye-bye, guys. Thank you, listeners. Bye-bye, everyone.
Have a great day.
Awesome.
All right. I'm glad those guys could come back.
That's awesome.
So, we've got about 59 minutes to go. No, 49, 48 minutes to go.
Can I plug a couple more things?
Please, and I've got your song ready here if we're ready for that. Whenever we're ready for
it. Got a new band called Coco Mofo. We're playing out. Our next performance is at Isla Gallery, which is 2nd and Kalamath.
Mm-hmm.
209, 211 Kalamath for First Friday.
Matt McGessie, one of the owners.
That's going to be on the May First Friday, so if you guys are done hibernating by then, come on out.
Sounds good.
It's a new gallery. That's kind of like where we kind of started hanging out, crossing our streams, you know, at Revo's back in the day.
Oh, really?
You know, before Sundell, I think
it's in that location? That's
well, it's
location.
Right there. Well, Revo's was, what, 9th and Kalamath or
something like that.
And this is like 7 blocks down.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like cyclical, how Denver goes in cycles.
Right.
You know, you go away long enough, you come back, and their art gallery, art
mm-hmm.
district is still there, but it's moved, you know, down the street.
A few blocks
away. Yeah, a couple blocks away. And then there's the off First Friday where people are doing the warehouses again,
mm-hmm.
which I've seen. Which is not like the warehouse in the Lodo or Five Points, which just became gentrification.
Yeah.
Just went from
it's more
cool
it's
art
more
district
Western.
To just gentrify every fucking
totally.
Thing. Let's just add a coffee shop, put a bird on it, and be done. Everything over
put
here.
Put a bird on it.
Put a bird on it. Now, but this is still like authentic. I still give it my stamp of authenticity.
Know, what is the name of that gallery?
ILA. ILA. It's...
Right.
It's kind of like off the beaten path, and that's what Revo's was back before it became the institution that Art Walk is.
Mm.
You know, like, I mean, I was going there back in 97,
98. I remember there used to be galleries all over downtown, and every Friday they all had wine to
mm-hmm.
give out, and it was like every Friday me and Devin would go.
Buskers. You'd have
the
buskers
galleries.
Out there, and people
everything.
Would street perform, and contortionize or whatever they call it. It's kind of like a Wren festival. It used to be, you know, where, you know, it wasn't like this, oh, you know, you walk the couple of doors to the next place that has wine, and then, you know, it was more of a movement, I guess.
Didn't it used to be first Thursdays, though?
I don't know if it was. I wasn't down when it was Thursday. I wasn't leaving.
I remember Friday,
shitty job.
Sorry, I kept track.
Not that it matters, but I remember that because you could just go walk down a couple blocks in Lodo and get wasted. Mm. White girl wasted on some white wine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You're looking at art.
I don't know. I'm not sure.
So, Matt, did you want to join the... I've got one of Toyin's songs here to play.
Yeah,
is this a good time?
Go ahead and do the struggle.
I'm sorry to come crash your party for such a short time. Late.
You gotta go?
I have to take my niece to gymnastics.
Well, thanks for coming, Courtney.
Thanks
for joining
the
discussion.
It was nice to meet all of
you. Nice to meet you as well.
I'll be back. All right.
That'd be a perfect time to play my song when everyone's leaving. Right. Sweet, let's do that. Yeah, let's do that.
A few people here. So this is one of your...
It's how you stay underground, kids. That's how you stay underground.
The struggle. I'm just going to take a second here
to
call it up.
Is this the new band you were just talking about?
This is just me as a solo artist being a rapper. This is my first incarnation, I think.
Man, I don't know. Is there any way I can charge this?
Oh, I got it on my phone.
Oh, cool.
Because I knew who I'm dealing with here.
Well, look what's happening, man.
I know. It's just that you're in the basement.
Oh.
It's the basement!
Emotionally in the basement.
All right, so who do I just put it to?
To the mic.
Oh, wow, just to the mic, huh?
Yeah. And you can say this is The Struggle, this is MC Earl Gravy.
Okay, that, what he just said.
It's no story without struggle.
About a year ago, before I started the band, Coco Mofo is what I'm doing now, and I started, you know, I've been doing music since 90, 4. I was in the DC Youth Orchestra back then. Started a band called Throwdown Syndicate, which is a punk rock predecessor of go-go and punk rock hybrid.
Mm.
If you're familiar with those East Coast,
like
Fugazi, Minor Threat, and Trouble Funk, and go-go and punk rock were kind of like flip sides of the coin in DC. Music of the youth. I grew up going to the 930 Club, listening to all that stuff. Played CBGBs before it was torn down.
What?
One of the black kids that like metal, you know, like, where are those guys going? Well, they seem cool. They probably have weed. You know, just hanging out with those misfits in D.C.
Were you in Cabrini Green?
That's Chicago.
Oh, right.
That's Chicago. I'm from Berry Farms, which is probably...
No, that's Berry Farms. That's what I was thinking of.
D.C. equivalent of Cabrini.
Yeah, yeah.
But a lot of musical groups came out of my neighborhood. Junkyard Band, Backyard Band, lot of go-go groups, a lot of just music in D.C. comes out of that area. I moved out here and just kept doing it and still doing it 26 years later.
Sounds great.
Council of Word is an album my friends just put out called Indignorance. They're local Colorado rap group, and it's called Indignorance is the name of their album.
And that's Council of Word?
Council of Word. They just put it out. It should be available for you to go download and stream. I did 3 songs with them on that. We're performing April 10th.
All right.
At Goosetown Tavern, which is, you know, Colfax, right across from the Blue Bird.
Denver Vintage Reggae Society.
Yes, yes, with Miggy. Big up to Migs. What's up, Migs? I know you're listening.
Leslie Somerville. Field.
So there's a lot of different, you know, like you said, Denver is 3 degrees of separation. It's not like 6 degrees in other cities where if you know 3 people here, you have a friend in common.
Almost always.
And there's always usually an interesting correlation to how you guys are met. I mean, Sundell, you know, just...
Sure.
Just, I go everywhere I go, I will have someone that I'll be like, oh, yeah, I used to work at this place. And they're like, oh, you mean Coburg? And I'll be like, no, not that one. But, you know.
You worked there too, though, right?
I did. I did work there. That was the circuit, you know. Yeah, you kind of, like, got on the circuit. You started doing the phone jobs, and, you know, you could. It was one of the only jobs you could do back then that they didn't drug test.
That's true.
And, you know, they didn't care what you came to work smelling like as long as, you know, or wearing. Yeah. As long as you got
the number.
Or what
you were drawing between
it was, what is that? Yeah. It was merit-based. You got treated, whether your work. If you could put those surveys on the floor or wherever they went, they didn't care. I went to work. I can't even incriminate myself. I went to work on so many substances, but I got the numbers done. As long as we got the numbers done, they didn't care. We could say, rest in peace, Phil Duncan, Phil Duncan himself. He would just say the craziest shit.
Oh, Phil Duncan.
And if you knew, if you were sitting next to him, you didn't have to worry about getting in trouble that day because he was going to say at least 3 things that were just like, yeah, it was going to be like some FCC violations.
Did you ever get Sundell, Chris?
No.
I thought you missed it.
Oh,
did you ever, Taylor?
Oh, no.
No?
No, I wanted to, though, when you talked about it.
Yeah. Did you ever apply? It seems like the kind of thing.
It was like one of those jobs you stumbled onto.
I worked at Coburg.
Yeah.
It was one of those things in the back of the Westford you would see, and you're like, oh, okay. No drug test. Where do I sign up? I just stumbled across the place. I had a really shitty job selling steak knives.
Right.
You
this
know,
is a good
like,
story.
I just stumbled. I was like, I'll just go in this place and go in there. And the guy who was working, Joel is the guy. He's like, I don't really need any steak knives, but if you can get your way, work your way in here with selling steak knives, you might as well work on the phones with us. And I was like, well, how much you guys paying? 850. I was like, 850? This is like 97. That was like, okay, I can do that. Yeah. That's going to pay my rent, and I'm going to have money for drugs.
Yeah.
So I just applied, and I did it.
What a job. For the rest of my life.
It was a great job. It was the greatest shitty job
for
ever.
For sure.
Like, I've had a lot of shitty jobs, but that job was like, you wanted to go to your shitty job.
Office
like,
Space came out the year I started
working. I was just thinking it
there.
Was like Office
or maybe
Space.
Like
it
last
was.
Year.
It
was
totally
perfect.
Was. It was totally, there was characters.
And
there
once
was,
you once you got your surveys, you could just basically call people and then hang up on them all day long.
Oh, man.
Who didn't do that?
I did not do that.
I didn't
okay. I did not. I phoned until, I phoned and boned. That's what I did. I phoned
you
and
boned. You used to hang up after, one after the other?
Well, no, I mean, there's different, what she's saying, once
okay,
you got your
I mean,
surveys,
so
what she's saying,
yeah.
I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
Once you got your surveys,
yeah.
They're revenge calls.
You're off the clock.
No, you got your revenge calls, because you know you had calls that you were like, oh, I'm going to.
Oh, no, it's not even revenge. This is me just ringing your phone.
Oh, really?
Look like I'm working
I had the revenge calls. I had the revenge.
Like,
I put them on my Kill Bill suite after
the
certain numbers I just made a note of.
There
I'm
was some guy
him.
At my work that did that all the time. Like, he had a collated list of people who were asshats to him on the phone, and he would call them every day.
Was it John Reedy?
It might have been. I don't remember his
I
name.
It was John Reedy.
But I was like, what is this motherfucker doing? But, like,
Reedy,
he straight up would just call these people every day and harass
did
them.
Did he dress all in black and, like,
I don't think it was John Reedy.
An attitude.
I don't think it was John
Reedy. I
don't
know, but I was
John
like,
Reedy was a character. He
was
like goth Dracula.
He was a mean guy.
He was a mean guy.
I was like, literally, you're going to get charges thrown at you. Like, you are harassing people. And
that
he would
was
do, like, the same
we
numbers every day.
Though. We were just
yeah.
asking from research, market research at Sundell.
Yeah.
So as long as we weren't asking for money, people, I used a fake English accent.
That was the greatest thing.
Gandalf
I mean,
Hendrix.
Gandalf
Hendrix. This is before the Lord of the Rings. People didn't know who Gandalf was. Like, oh, you have such a great accent. Where are you from? Oh, Chicago, originally.
You're ready for the Renaissance
yeah.
Fair. Do you remember my Willy voice?
Yes.
They would never let me use Willy.
They would.
I never got a surface as Willy.
We had to get approval.
I had a really good old man voice.
For our alter egos. It was kind of like a phone sex line. You could use these different, you know.
Y'all asked them?
Well, we had
well,
to.
Well, he was tolerated, and then, like, everyone else thought, like, well,
tolerated.
I've got a weird voice. I can probably get away
no,
with it, and they would
you,
never
like
let
I
anyone
said, if you got the numbers, you could do no wrong. They didn't give a shit if
yeah,
I used
yeah.
the Lola Falana or Marilyn Monroe
That's
voice.
True. Willie
as long
wasn't
as I got
seller.
The surveys. And we were calling, doing, like, Jewish surveys. Like, this
That's
is,
true.
Like, one of the first questions. Hey, are you Jewish? People were... Hey, what are people calling us asking for Jews? You know, people would get upset, call their local congressman, be like, no, 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 this is for the Jewish community. Had to explain it. And, you know, so...
It was Joel.
Yeah,
it was...
It was
Joel's baby, wasn't
it?
It
was... I don't know whose baby it was, but we were calling, hey, first question, are you Jewish? You know, like, people are not, like, this is 97, people are not okay.
What do you mean, am I Jewish?
You know, like, so we had to soften the blow... With these weird voices, you know. It was just whatever it took to get the surveys. And Sundell mm-hmm. fostered creativity for me. I don't know, as a writer, MC, I could
I
sit
wrote
there.
A novel. I wrote
exactly.
a novel based on Sundell.
You could,
did either
you,
of you ever fake a survey?
Nah. See, I had a moral code like a samurai. You couldn't fake no survey. Although, I will admit to getting close to finishing a survey and then them hanging up. And so I had to fill in the blanks. But
so
I know.
Faked a survey.
I figured how
that.
They
And I think I may have faked at times, like if Joel walks in the room, I might have been
faked
like, oh,
on a call?
Do you have this, blah, 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 and just pretending. But I wouldn't be talking to the respondent.
Yeah, I mean, it was a cold time, man. You know, you had to get those $8.50 an hour was a lot back then.
It was
Seriously.
Actually like that was the best paying non-restaurant job that I ever had.
Man, and you know, you got to work your own hours.
Did you guys work day shift or?
Oh no, I was relegated to the night. They would not tolerate my shenanigans in the daytime. Yeah. I was a night person almost exclusively until the end. And then after that point, I was like, you know what? I'm out of here. Like, I stayed there for 3 years. I would leave and go back. And it was so a job where if you needed a quick 30, 40 yeah. hours, they always had the hours. Mm-hmm. And as long as you knew how to keep yourself from smelling like vodka, you know, you get a little spritz or something, they didn't mm-hmm. care. They had people there. There was one lady who sat at her desk and drank wine. Out of her cup, and it was like, you no know what that is.
Yeah, I was just saying, way to call a lady out there.
Huh? Hey, man, I didn't say her real
it.
Name.
I hopefully slurred it.
I didn't say her real name, but I think she's dead anyway, so it's all good.
I was about to
Arrested.
Say more.
Rest in peace. We yeah, know what was in that bottle.
All of our coworkers.
Coffee
all so good.
Was not in that. That was not a coffee cup, all right? We already know.
I
red.
Don't know that to be true.
It was red, stained wine.
Do you know where I went after that job? I waitressed at the White Spot. Graveyard, do you remember that?
The one that's I wish that was still there.
No, the one on Broadway.
That's quite
like,
the weird racist
The one that's a parking lot.
Yeah,
like on 8th, 7th and Broadway
yeah,
or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bank. I think
yeah.
it's a UMB bank.
Yeah.
So we're all here. Ghost of Denver is an idea I wanted to do like a... places in Denver that don't exist anymore that we've
Muddy's.
All remembered
Muddy's.
And had like yeah Muddy's and just had weird experiences like I wanted to, I'm throwing that out there to the Akashic memory so we can get that worked on and maybe have like a compilation
Ghost of Denver
Ghost
sure.
of Denver
Devin will be interested
oh man
too.
I mean
did you guys
just,
ever oh I'm sorry I didn't
go ahead
remember. Did you ever hang out in the grain silos down by Paris in the plot before they made it into the condos?
They still have, like, I live not too far from there, and they still have some weird, like, areas down there where it's kind of just, you can feel the old Denver history.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Union Station is one of the most haunted places in Denver, and I've seen some crazy shit in my new 3-year-old building. Like, I'm like, whoa, what's going on here? Like,
in the distance or in the...
Like, okay, I live at 401. My apartment's 401, and it's 1850 Chestnut. Less than 100 feet from where the Union Station sign is. 17th and Chestnut is where the Union Station sign is. So, I've lived there for 3 years, and... I live in 401. The guy in 403, they found him dead in his apartment. 10 days, coming home, like, what is that smell? Like, just in the apartment, stinking. 402, the woman that lived in 402, she passed away. Then 6 months later, the lady that moved in after her passed
away.
Bad
news.
And this is like a 3-year-old building. And I'm like... I'm in 401. I can't come 403, 402. Shit. Like, I'm like a death. People are going to think I'm the death. You know, like, I'm the neighbor. Like, just don't piss him off or you'll be next. You know? Be a great horror movie. The black guy killing everybody every time. That'd be dope.
So, Matt, they caught that little hunchback puncher guy.
Well, I don't know if he's a hunchback.
Well, no, he looks like a hunchback as he's running on the
kid.
What are you talking about?
What happened?
Yeah, oh, this little guy that's been terrorizing this neighborhood with a beard and a bald guy, and he's short, and he, like, stuck up one of the employees, mutiny employees, recently outside of
his
apartment.
Well.
And he was on camera punching this woman walking her dog for no apparent reason.
Oh, yeah, I saw that on Facebook.
And they finally caught the guy, and I just saw that today, so that's... just a conversation.
The Keebler elf.
Well, he had come into our store. He has been coming into our store.
Mm-hmm.
He'll open the door and he'll yell, "You're all a bunch of ISIS. I'm going to blow this place up." And he'll like,
no
fuck
shit.
You guys and fuck you guys. I don't know what kind of rating you have on your podcast. I apologize.
Oh, no, that's cool.
But he would come in and yell that. And then, like, you know, we'd kind of like, "Oh, you get out of here." And then he'd come around the corner and he'd split and he'd go and yell at some people on the way down the street.
So he's got this trip about ISIS.
Something.
Like all liberals are ISIS?
I don't know. He's only come in once. He comes in on gym. He's come in on gym several times. Came in the morning and did it. And one of my employees, you know,
what's
came out from behind
problem?
The counter and told him to leave. And he left. He waited outside until she got off work. He followed her home, which is a block away, And he threatened to kill her, threatened to stab her to death with a knife and everything.
Wow.
So she called the cops. They came. She made a statement and everything. We got pictures for them from our cameras. And then 2 days later, or a day later, he came out and he threatened somebody as they were coming out of Nooch, which is the vegan market next door to us down on Ellsworth.
Mm.
And she got away from him and got back into Nooch, called the police, filed a report. And then a couple days later, he pops his head in here again, and one of my baristas was like, "Hey, that's the guy that came after Meg." And so me and my business partner Jim were here, so we came running out and chased him down and tackled him and were, you know, holding him, and Jim had him held down in the gutter, and I had two people were on the phone with 911. One of them had called before, like, I had even gotten out the door because he knew what was going on. And the other guy was like, "Hey, you guys got to get down here. There's this guy that's, you know, you're looking for." I had just texted, as I was running out the door, I texted the officer that I had his phone number, and he knew what case number we were working on and everything like that. And so we eventually had to let the guy go. I mean, hey, we're not police, so we really shouldn't be doing that to begin with. We had to let him go, and the two people on 911 on dispatch were following him down the street, following him all the way from Ellsworth all the way down to Alameda, where he got together with a couple of his other guys and kind of scared my people off. But the police never showed up, never took another statement. Could have taken this guy in, because 2 days later, he goes and he walks up to a lady and goes, "Hey, what a lovely dog you have,"
and punches her
in the face, and then runs off.
Yeah, that's the one that made... the news. That's the one that made the news. That lovely dog. Which has so much to be said about Colorado. And just, "Oh, you can't be telling nobody you got a lovely dog and punching them. That's where I draw the line. You can't be terrorizing no businesses."
How did he get on the news for that, not for, like, pulling a knife out of
That's what I'm saying. Like, that's what's funny about Denver. You fuck with dogs, it's like that was that Don't Fuck With Cats documentary.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you get people get on the internet and they'll shut you down if you fuck with animals. But, you know, as long as you're...
this is sort of unique cruelty. I mean, like, people stick people up all the time, but who's so cruel that they just punch someone walking a dog?
Oh, that
is a pretty dog, damn it!
Maybe it was, like, an attempted dog nap. Maybe he was trying to, like, knock her out and steal the dog.
Who knows? We found out where he lives. A few days after that, they did the news report. There was a Crime Stoppers report. And one of my friends in the neighborhood, his kids, saw the dude at Safeway down the street over here.
Mm-hmm.
Called 911. They told him to call. They told them to call Crime Stoppers. So they got on the phone with Crime Stoppers. And they followed the guy home. Talked to the neighbors about him and everything like that. We're waiting for the police to show up. And the police never showed up. But he found out that he's living in a carriage house down the street over here. His parents pay for his rent because
he's
a little loopy.
Yeah.
And so eventually, I guess they picked him up.
I live like four blocks away, and I didn't know any of this.
I've known about. Well, I used to live 49 South Sherman, which is, you know, basically right around the corner. But that was like 20 years ago. And even then, it was still...
It was much worse back then. I've been in Denver since 93. I've had an art studio above the Hornet. I've been going to... I went to 7 South. And, you know, we've been here for 7 years. Jim owned the joint down the street at Three Kings for 10 years before that. And so I've been down on Broadway for a long... The Irish Rover was the Shamrock.
Mm-hmm.
And... didn't have finished floors. They had dirt floors in the back, and
Barracudas? Is that Barracudas?
Or no, there's a sports
Barry's and Barracudas.
Well, Barracudas was in that Skyline. Where Little Devils is now.
I think so.
Yeah.
Is Barracudas still open on 11th and
no? Closed on November. Yeah.
Sadly.
Barry's was the original.
That was the original Skylark.
Right. Skinheads.
Mm-hmm. That's what Gary Lee used to bartend.
Gary Lee, rest in peace.
Yep.
man.
And then Badgers was the Brown Barrel.
Yeah.
And I never went in that place. I was too
Badgers
scared.
Badgers was like, that was
the barrel was great.
What was that?
Guy would feed you, like, sloppy
dreadlocks. Yeah, that's always been, like, the place you want to go on Broadway if you just want to get dirty
Pete's
drunk.
Cafe,
just,
no
like, don't give a
Colfax.
Fuck dirty drunk.
Yeah.
Ghosts of Denver.
I lived up on Capitol Hill, so I went to the Pegasus.
Oh, yeah.
And you would go to the Pegasus at 1:45, so you were there at 2 a.m., or you'd get there at 1:50, 1:55, they'd still let you in. They'd close and lock the doors at 2 a.m., and whoever's in there can still drink.
Was that the...
there used to be
that's the... Old Benders?
John DeLay's
what's now... Pegasus, the Snake Pit, the Beauty Bar.
Yeah. Okay, okay,
like,
yeah.
Like my mother's bedroom.
My mother's... Your mom's house.
Oh, yeah.
No.
The Ram down on Colfax used to do that, too. Lock the doors, the Ram.
Yeah.
It's not the Ram anymore.
Yeah.
I think it's the Owl now. Yeah, lock the doors, light them up. You can drink till, like, 3 or 4, but
yeah,
you're
was a cool place.
Yeah.
Boys.
Yeah.
What,
yeah.
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 I was
yeah.
Doors
was the first time I ever...
What is there
puked.
Now? Isn't it, like, some weird bar there now?
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Where Gabor's was?
Where Gabor's was?
It's the Wild Corgi.
It's also gone.
Has anyone been there?
No, the new one I haven't.
I mean, that name is terrible,
yeah.
First of all.
The Wild Corgi.
The
apparently
Wild
they have
Corgi.
A drag brunch, though, on Sundays.
I am down. I'm definitely pro drag brunch, but...
I used to work at the Papa Grind.
Oh, yeah, it was... Yeah.
Drag queen brunching.
Yeah.
Petticoat brunching on Saturdays.
That
on
was
Sundays.
The shit. All my friends worked there.
That would everybody would pick up their family at the airport and bring them right to the Buff and Grind Cafe. Or it was the best place to go for hangovers.
Yeah.
But I did that for like 4 years.
That's where Aces is now, right? Or
Aces is across the street. That place is now like the Penn Street?
Some crazy...
There's another bar there.
Yeah, there's some crazy new bar over there.
Is
they got
the
all
Williams
fancy
still existing?
The Williams is still there, still a good pour. Still a good pour.
That's good.
Barring drag brunches, I am super disappointed with this city's brunch scene. It's fucking terrible. I'm supposed to wait 2 hours to have a crappy biscuit at Atomic?
Don't do that. Any place that's
so
going to make you wait, you don't wait.
Yeah. Oh, no, I don't. I have a moral objection to waiting, especially for food that I can cook in my own house.
Yeah.
Like, I can make some goddamn eggs. I'm too lazy to make eggs, but I can do it.
But then,
like, I'm not going to wait for that food.
Sure.
Yeah. I obviously feel very strongly about it, but that's the truth. Like, I don't understand our city's obsession with brunch.
What the hell? And
I
just
heard
every
place
does
brunch.
Yeah, every place does brunch.
Well, the thing is, the trendy places that do brunch. Like, you know, like, if you go to, what's that place? Oh, my God. The Breakfast King. Breakfast King, you don't have to wait for no brunch in there. You,
it's all day,
Breakfast King, they ain't making you wait.
Butcher Block.
That should be your slogan,
yeah.
We ain't making you wait for no brunch.
Swift's on Santa Fe.
There used to be a Swift's
right next door.
Right next door?
I loved the one next door.
That was my shit.
It was my shit, too, back in the day.
That's right. I asked my wife to move in with me.
Wow.
Oh, really?
Really?
I mean, that's the place you want. I've gotten handed that. Swifts, rest in peace to Swifts, because that place was the place
they
you
had
could
a
go.
Ass
and no one cared what you did, as long as you didn't disturb the other customers.
So our current landlord here used to own Swifts.
Oh, okay.
And he owned this Swift. He bought us.
He owned this whole basic block, right?
Well, he owns our building with Ditch behind us, Players, which is where Swifts was.
Okay.
Boss and the.
Just to Ellsworth, right? Or
the plant shop.
Yeah.
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 Basically.
So, plant shop on up. So, he owned this building, and I'm talking with Jack Jensen, the previous owner of Mutiny. He bought this building for $450,000.
Wow.
And he recently, about 4 years ago, turned down $1.8 million for it.
Wow.
Man. If I'd have known all the money that I spent at Swift's, and at Mutiny back in the day, we could have put something together.
Yep.
We could have put
seriously
a package together.
I used to come into Swift's every morning and have breakfast, and my wife would come and meet me for breakfast before she went to work at Pandora Jewelry.
Pandora.
Yeah. We used to go there, and then finally one morning, you know, her cat had just died. We were hanging out together all the time anyways.
You were just like, fuck it.
Yeah, why don't you move in with me? I had an apartment over by Gabor's and... Niccolo's.
Shittiest
pizza ever.
There's another great ghost place that's
anymore.
Totally gone now.
Yeah.
There's a Niccolo's down in Highlands Ranch.
I heard that, but I mean, like, that's the, first of all, who's going to Highlands Ranch?
My mom lives out by there, so that's the only reason why I know it.
And that's why you've heard of it.
But
That's crazy.
That was a long time ago. That was 20 years ago.
Yeah,
5 cent fresh toast and Patsy Cline on the jukebox, right?
It feels like longer because if you last 5 years in this town, you feel like it's 10.
Yeah.
Because it has aged you.
You've done that many drugs.
It's aged you.
Been out that many nights.
Uh-huh.
That many phone jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Worked at that many bars.
Well, I applaud both of you guys for being having the intuitiveness and the hustle, the stick-to-itiveness, whatever it's called, to be here and be still one of the
small business
bastions of old Denver at this point. I mean, 20 years, you know, you're basically, you got to watch. You got to watch coming from the city.
Well, we've had this place for 7 years.
Okay.
It was Jack Jensen's for 8 years before that, so it takes us back 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
It was Ichabod's Books and Mrs. Crane's Coffee for 11 years. And then before that, it was Bill Good's A Better Book Buyer, which is, he had a store here and he had a store up on East Colfax. And I forget how long he had that, but this has been a bookstore for 35 years. And when Jack sold it to us, he told us that it had
to stay a bookstore. Whoa. And you guys got the comics now and the graphic novels, and I just go up there and read them. I don't buy.
The coffee bar was here when Jack bought it because it was Ichabod's Books and Mrs. Crane's Coffee. But it was like more like a lemonade stand that you had in your grandma's basement. And you're just, hey, you want some Kool-Aid? So we took that and we filled that out. But that's the lifeblood of the business.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how Jim and I met, was we were at a coffee shop.
Yeah.
Peaberry's Coffee in the Tabor Center downtown. Peaberry's were all over Denver.
Mm-hmm.
And they got sued by Starbucks for ripping off their design and style and color thing and everything like that. But that's like right as Starbucks was becoming ubiquitous.
Coming its juggernaut self.
And I started making coffee up in Montana, and I didn't even know what a Starbucks was.
Yeah.
Moved out here, got the job at Peaberry, met Jim. Jim was doing zines with his buddies, and so I started doing art, doing drawings for them and collecting stories from friends.
Nice.
And we did zines for a few years together and started doing them on our own and worked at coffee shops. Then I moved to Montana for a little bit, came back, and Jim and his dad had started a fence business, worked out in Parker.
Like a fence?
Like building fences.
Jewelry? I was like,
yeah, we were stealing stuff here.
Cat burglars and shit?
Speakers out of the truck. Parker's the best place to
buy. We started a fence, you know. It's
Ichabod's was money back in the day.
Well, and Ichabod's got shut down because they, I guess unknowingly, had been buying stolen books that were being basically picked up out of the back door.
I didn't know that was a thing.
Probably stolen by me.
Hey, I got these books over here.
Enough that they were able to do to get the police involved and put in an investigation.
That was just a joke. I would never steal anything because that is wrong, both morally and legally.
So they were like, well, you're going to have to shut down. Either you shut down your business or I'll take you to court and sue you.
He used to order stuff for me way back in the day when you were still making catalog orders for books and shit, like before people were on the interwebs.
Yeah.
So I mean that has to be a big thorn in your side, is the internet hustle.
But a lot of people like to get out of there. I mean, in spite of the Instacarts and the Netflixes and the Amazon delivery and everything like that, people still like to get out of their house and go do something and have an experience
and meet other weirdos.
Yep. And I think that what we've really tried to do is create a place that is a good alternative to your phone, and you can go and you can pick a book out, you can find tons of stories, you can play a game, whether it's pinball or chess or Jenga or Go. You can hear a comedy show
or a band.
Or I think it's tonight is the Magic open mic night.
Oh, yeah.
Magicians come in and try out their magic tricks in front of a live studio audience.
That's money.
So hear me out.
That's
hear me
money.
Out. Slogan for the place. hear me out. All
right.
Mutiny Bookstore, home of the good weirdo.
We've been going with the most dangerous bookstore in the world.
Nice.
Oh, that's
that
that's
falls
nice.
In line with the being held up on a
Or as my son likes to do, is he likes to sit in the front window and just look.
Yeah.
It's great people watching.
Yeah,
I mean, you gotta get here early.
Just watch.
It's great people watch.
Ellsworth is zero. Everything north of Ellsworth is one north, and everything south of Ellsworth is one south. Broadway is zero. Everything east and west. And so this is where we call Ground Zero, Denver.
This is pretty much.
And there's a lot of crazy people down here.
So Matt, can you tell us the significance of 126?
It was a number that Jim and his buddies had already had when I met them. The farthest back that they go, and what they say that they kind of base it on is Harry Houdini died at 1:26 p.m. And then on Halloween. So we just find all these 126s that pop up all over the prison. And we say, oh, it doesn't mean anything. You know, there's no real reason behind it. It pops up, but it's starting to pop up in weird places. Like the big Huzin particle like vibrates at a certain 126 frequency. And then my wife and I started making out on January 26th. So there's like these little ones that pop up all over the place. And you just kind of go with that.
Nice.
Yeah, it's
fun.
That's the number nine.
3 times 42, and 42 is the answer to the life.
What is the meaning of life?
Is so you got 126 out of 42.
Damn. And that's what the address here is?
No, it's just the number that personal like got totem. The 126 on the back wall.
But what's the? Isn't this like first? And this is
this
like
is 2 South Broadway.
Oh, okay. All right. Cool. All right.
I used to live on number nine, Bannock. And when I went to go look at the house, I went to 9 South instead of 9 North, which are literally like across the street from each other. Well, you know, Bannock does that little zigzag. And pounded on someone's door, like cop knocked for like 10 minutes. Because I'm like, where the fuck is this person who's supposed to meet me here? Before I realized, like, oh shit, it's a zero block. There's a 9 across the street.
We get a lot of deliveries here for
2 North.
2 North Broadway.
Is it food?
A lot of times.
Start a side business.
Some of it's
food. Like, this sushi is unrelated to the sushi really across cool the street.
Above Chubby Cattle. Chubby Cattle's 2 North Broadway. And they will try, the people have stuff delivered to Chubby Cattle instead of up to their apartments and stuff.
What if it's loud up there? Some
books. We know who they belong to.
That's what's up, man.
Well, John, I feel like you've been left out of the parlance for a few minutes now. You have anything to say about anything anyone else has said or anything to close the show with?
I never lived over here. I've lived in Capitol Hill a long time. But I first moved to Denver in 2000, and I was living like in this country club apartments at Ellsworth and Downing. Didn't know Denver. And I wandered east over to Cherry Creek and ended up getting a job waiting tables at Little Ollie's and flipping burgers at the Cherry Cricket. But I realized that that was not my part of town. Like, this is not really cool. So one day I walked west on Ellsworth, and the first place I came upon was Ichabod's. Ichabod's and Kitty South's.
Whippets.
The original Fahrenheit's Heights location. And yeah, anyway, when I discovered this Book Row, I knew I had found.
And back then it was still the Book Row.
Forever it was.
There used to be at least 8 bookstores between First and Alameda.
The Rebus Gallery.
How many are there now?
No, the Rebus Gallery is farther.
Because I know there's the few
Broadway
down.
Book Mall and Fahrenheit's. Heights. Then there's us. This is the original. This is the last original. Well, I take that back. Us and Fahrenheit's are the last original bookstores on this block, or on this strip. Broadway Book Mall used to be a couple doors north of us, and it was a two-level bookstore.
It was the Denver Book Mall, right?
Yes, yes. And then they just consolidate all their sellers, and they put them down there. They were one of those like salon kind of bookstores, where each person has a booth where they sell their books. They've got a number code on it. And so this book, 126001, comes from this section. This book over here, 42003, comes from over. And so they know how to separate the money out to everybody. But it used to be up there. But yeah.
I miss the Denver Book Fair. You could get used Playboys and all kinds of great stuff there.
That's what Piehole is now.
Right?
Yeah.
I get calls all the time at Kilgore about...
bringing it back.
Well, do you buy magazines? And I don't know where to send people.
We'll take old Playboys, like 1980 and older. We'll take those.
Okay.
The good ones.
Dude, I sell them at like $5, $10, $15 a pop.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, yeah. For smut? You get a lot of money for smut.
But it's not just smut. People like the articles.
Touche, touche.
People like the advertisements.
Oh, yeah, you like can buy some cocaine stuff. Right. Like they have the old cocaine accessories.
Or whatever.
Yeah, like straws.
The
old,
they did really the have good articles on Playboys.
Yeah. Yes, the single
the
panel.
Dan Wilson.
You'll see articles in there by Kerouac,
Norman Mailer,
yeah.
Larry, and lots of.
Hunter S. Thompson.
Yeah.
The interview with Carter.
Yep. Yeah. We sold a copy of one with Trump in it for $15, and it was a new one, so he was in there. So as soon as he became president, we put it right on mine.
Oh wow! Just snapped up. Yeah. Oh wow!
Opportunists.
I think I actually read that one when it was you know.
It's a newer one. It was like a mid eight or
mid
eighties, like nineties, or something.
Mid
nineties
or something.
You know, they were a little bit more raunchier in that time period. Mm-hmm. Now they've kind of gone back to more of a classy band's pornography.
Boo!
Gentlemen.
Yeah. Boo, Playboy, boo.
Didn't they get rid of their pictures altogether?
They went unnude. That's all I know.
I've heard something like that before. Yeah. They stopped with the pictorials altogether.
Man Magazine.
That brought them back.
Man Magazine.
When I was growing up, I always read Penthouse. Because they had great articles.
And letters.
Yes, the letters. The Penthouse
Forum. You can't see me out there, but I'm pumping my fist for the Penthouse.
Bukowski used to write for Penthouse.
Yeah, he did.
It's true. Yeah.
And they had the snapper. They had the snapper shots.
I guess I was reading Bukowski before I knew who Bukowski was.
Yeah, he was definitely. I remember those from my grandpa's house, and he had there was always something interesting in a Penthouse as opposed to Playboy, which is just titties.
Well, it was titties, and then it was political commentary.
Yeah,
and it was a little bit too highbrow for me. I needed something a little bit more titillating.
Yes, titillating and titties.
That's right.
Awesome
titties. And so, have you had any author events at Kilgore recently, John?
No, you know, the space is kind of small.
It is a small space.
And I love that Mutiny is open late. In fact, whenever I'm down here to pick up my wife from the High Dive or Three Kings, I have her meet me here.
Because Kilgore's generally closes at 6.
Yeah, we're open 10 to 6 every day. And I'd like to be open late, but it is hard to stay later than 6 o'clock.
Just hard on the mentality
and standing there all day. So, yeah, we don't have a lot of author events because it requires me to stay late.
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys have Aaron Comet Bus up there when he was in town? We had him last time.
Yeah, you guys had an event with him. He came up to the shop, which I was really glad to meet him because I love Comet Bus.
Missed the chance to meet him. He's an old hero of mine.
Oh, you weren't here when...
Jim was getting married. That day, it was kind of I'm not going to say shock anybody, but he did have a pregnant wife. Or fiance. So they had to get married.
A rush.
And so that actually, it fell on the day that
oh, okay.
So we missed out on him, but I would have loved to meet him.
Yeah, great guy. By the way, I was in Brooklyn in September, and Aaron Comet Bus is part owner of two bookstores. And I went to one, I think it's in Williamsburg.
Pioneering Zinester Aaron Comet Bus.
It's called Book Thug Nation, about half the size of Kilgore.
Thug Nation.
And only good books. I mean, nothing but cream on the shelves. Mm-hmm. Yeah, not a bad title.
What do you call good books?
Oh, the books that sell.
Because what we focus on, what we've been trying to get in here more lately, is, you know, obviously our George Orwell's, we're getting in, you know, a lot of dystopian books, you know, Margaret Atwood, but we also get in our favorites, you know, Hunter S. Thompson, The Beats, Murkowski. We've been trying to focus a lot on local authors and everything. We've been trying to get books in Spanish. Like, we've been carrying some Margaret Atwood in Spanish. Mm-hmm. And we've been carrying, I think we got Animal Farm in Spanish. And we've been trying to, we've been buying new books and been trying to bring that kind of stuff in here to make sure that people can get those books.
Yeah, it was, what percentage of your stock is new?
Probably 10%.
About 10%, yes.
It's not a very big stuff, big portion of it. But we have tons of local artists. Local authors.
Yeah.
Zach sells a lot of his books here. Sell a lot of Suspect Press publications. Sell a lot of Carl Krumpholz's pieces. A lot of Tinto Press. A lot of kids will come in with zines, and we'll sell a lot of their zines because that's what Jim and I. That's how we started.
The roots.
Selling zines. So when we were doing it though, we didn't make any money off of
right.
it. But I'm paying these kids like $2, $3, $4.
They're making a fortune.
Right. And well, I mean, compared, they're paying for their art and everything like that. What bothers nice. Me, though, is when I only see them once.
Mm.
You know, and you've given them this opportunity.
And then
given
just,
them this, and
they don't
these,
stick
like,
to
could go
it.
Out and do this thing again. They were so excited to do it.
Mm.
I've given them a little bit of cash and a little bit of hope. And then
they get a taste of life.
On the other hand, there's some people that I see every month. They bring in new stuff every month.
Nice.
And then, you know, they try and keep it a little bit more manageable, where they're a little bit
the sizes.
Quarter page, and,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, and they bring in decent quality stuff that I'm just like, I'm happy to sell it because I don't see it on my shelves anymore. So it's obviously selling out of here.
Yeah.
But that's, I wish we could have a bigger zine space, but man, it clears out really fast, too.
By the way, just out of curiosity, what, besides, we have the Denver Zine Library, of course, but besides you guys and us, who else carries zines? I know occasionally coffee shops you'll see a couple here and there, but is there a place? Is there another?
I don't know that there is. There's the Denver Zine Fest
right.
yearly
yeah.
where they can all come
does
together.
Does West Side Books over there up in
possibly.
That
I
area?
They seem like they
I've
would.
Been at, I go in there on a regular basis, and I don't recall seeing any zines.
We used to just go and sit right by the door at coffee shops and
yeah.
Yeah.
Record stores
yeah.
and stuff like that. You know, give them away.
Mm-hmm.
Because we were like, nobody's going to give us money to buy those things.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, nowadays, I'm seeing
the
same.
Let me say, you're the greatest small business in what you do to foster creativity from local artists. And you also have allowed me to have author events at Kilgore's. You've allowed me to have a variety show at Mutiny and sell my books to you at consignment, and you buy books at consignment prices
yeah.
too. So you guys are just
I
the greatest
at both,
small business
both
owners.
Of these places, Kilgore's and here.
That's
just
right.
on just random. Hey man, I'm doing this Thursday night. You gonna come down and yeah. So it definitely community.
Greatly appreciated.
It's a big part of our business. I mean, without our communities, there's you don't have people just walking in. And,
mm-hmm.
Oh, somebody told me about your place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's word of mouth, and that's still very, very big part of advertising is letting people know that you're here. And if they come in, have a good time, see something new, exciting, and awe-inspiring. Because you know, I get people that come in here and they just
yeah.
they get lost immediately.
Yeah,
there's, there's a lot to absorb.
It is a lot.
That's my ADD.
You guys have made such a cool hangout here. At Kilgore, I don't even put out a chair for
anybody. Yeah, the fear that they'll hang out.
I have the space for it.
Yeah. We really wanted to promote a lot of the coffee culture that used to be available at Muddy's and Paris on the Platte. Because
mm-hmm.
Paris on the Platte closed like just a year or two after we opened.
Yeah.
And which was really a bummer. I had been in there, and they had just bought this beautiful espresso machine that I was just, like, in awe of. And then I find out, like, less than a year after that, they closed it out. And it's just that neighborhood is so expensive down there.
I used to love their bookstore.
They had a bookstore. Muddy's had the coffee shop bookstore. It was just, like, little like this, you know, paperbacks all around and such.
Yeah.
Single cigarettes in a little glass.
Yeah, you can buy your beanies there.
Yeah. Real cheese sandwiches. Yeah.
Yes.
Cheese sandwich and a clove.
Yeah.
Cheese. You know what? Nobody's ever. You know, we sell cigarettes here, but nobody's asked me for a pack of cloves.
Good.
Posers.
No, I guess we don't.
I wish you sold singles, because I don't buy packs anymore.
Yeah.
Oh well. probably, oh, I think it's illegal, actually.
I think it's illegal to sell them single, too, but they're stopping it.
I think it's illegal.
I mean, you know, Lucy's. They're called Lucy's, right? Right? That's
right. Who's the guy in New York that killed someone?
Eric Garner.
Yeah. Oh,
I mean, that's just East Coast culture. You know, if you can get people would buy single sardines, you would just sell them out of the bag. That's just the culture.
Right.
But, you know, here.
You've had a lot of foot traffic all over.
People are buying sardines one at a time.
I have a bagel here with cream cheese. I need a sardine. Excuse me, sir.
Bagel and a lock. It's a lock. It's on lock. Shit on lock.
It's value lock.
It's value lock. Oh, man. That's a skit. That's definitely a skit.
All right. Well, I've exceeded my paid time at this point, but I'm enjoying it all. So we can keep on hanging out. But I don't want anyone to feel trapped.
I got to eat. But I love you all. I love you all.
Thanks everyone for coming.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for the community. Thanks for the outreach. And see you guys on the other side.
And thank you, Neil. Really like engineer. Until
nice next
time.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to finally meet you.
What's your name again?
Dwayne, man.
Dwayne.
Nice to meet you, Matt.
Nice to finally meet you.